I know how much you love it when you see the drawing board come out, and you know you'll get to taste some artwork here in just a little bit. Do you have the outline that goes with the message this morning? Hopefully you received one coming in, and hope you'll find a pen or pencil. And in a few minutes, I'm going to encourage you to make notes on the things that you hear shared in the message this morning. But before we do that, I want to set it up briefly with a little story that goes back to my first and only sabbatical that took place 20 years ago. Hard to believe that, 2002, 20 years ago. And I was fortunate to be able to take this trip and live out what was a bucket list for me, and that was five solo days of hiking in Zermatt, Switzerland. And I had studied different hikes to do, and one that particularly interested me was a guided climb of a mountain called the Breithorn. And you can see a picture of it here. Despite this image that shows the north face is actually listed as a low difficulty climb, because you come up from the other side where it's a fairly gentle slope going up to it, and you're not like scaling a sheer face of a rock. But when I went to sign up for this climb, there were a lot of questions in the form about my eyesight. Did I have trouble focusing on objects at a distance? Near, do I have trouble with double vision? And I've never had a problem in my life. I just checked no. And thought it was just kind of strange to ask those questions until I was on the climb, going up the final ascent on a 6-inch wide path that had a treacherous drop-off both sides. And what I experienced was, as I was looking down to walk on that path, my eyes were being tempted to focus on the valley below that was over 1,000 feet away. So my eyes were constantly trying to focus far away and on that path a few feet away. And what happened was, for the first time in my life hiking, I started to get dizzy. And when you get dizzy, you get wobbly. And I learned that people take exception to hiking with somebody to whom they are tied with a rope who gets wobbly on them. Now, our guide had given us very clear directions if this happens. He said, you make sure you just cup your eyes so that your eyesight cannot go very far. You're focused only on the step in front of you. And he said, for goodness sakes, if you start to get dizzy, don't look up. Don't look up. Because now your eyesight is going to go miles away, and when you look back down, it's just going to make it worse. He promised, on the way up, we'll stop. We'll take a moment to look around, take out your camera, take a picture. But he said, when we walk, you focus only on your next step. It was a great lesson, not only in mountain climbing, but in leadership. We all need aspiring vision, an eyesight of something toward which we're going in life, that calls forth something in us that brings us alive, that makes life worth living. But to get there, it requires a turning our head down and focusing on the next step in front of us. That proverb we heard is quite a familiar one because of the first line in it. Without vision, the people perish. Without something to give us a reason to live, we just sort of decline and withdraw and lose life. But not so many people are familiar with the rest of it. And happy are those who keep the teaching. Another way of saying that is that while it's true that without vision the people perish, happy are those who then focus on their next steps of obedience. That's why I've called the vision message this morning double vision. Because in the things you're about to hear, it's going to have that sense of mountain peaks at a distance. But then we're also going to talk about things that involve our next steps this quarter in this year, 2022. I want to dazzle you with some artwork, because the group that we used for leading us in a long-range visioning process is a Christian consulting company called Oxano. They've worked with some of the largest churches in America. And our governing board, a little over a year ago, had commissioned a group in our church, an equal number of leading staff members and lay members of the church, to come together and to develop a long-range vision for St. Luke's. Oxano is unique because they use what's called a 1-4-1-4 process, and I apologize for not getting this little diagram in your outline. But if you want to write this down, just flip over to the back side, and what you do is you write a big square that looks something like this. Then you put a line across the top, that will be the one. Put another line that gives you four blanks, another line that is another one, and then, oops, I didn't do, yes, that's good enough. And then the four blanks after that. Yeah. So, at the top, it's what is called a beyond the horizon vision. A beyond the horizon vision. This is where we see our church going 5+ years out. It's like a mountain peak at a long distance range that it's going to take you a while to get there. It's almost out of sight. But then you go to the next four areas that you define as the most critical areas that are going to get you there. This is what you're focusing on over the next 3 years. These are called background strategies. Background strategies. I would have said BS, but that didn't seem to be the right way to put it up here on the board, so we'll just say background. These are four areas that you give attention to for 3 years. And then you come to the next 1-4. You identify a mid-ground strategy. And this is a vision for what you will be doing in the immediate year in front of you. And then below that are four foreground initiatives. And you divide those up into the quarters of 90 days. And so each quarter, you're developing a new foreground initiative to help you accomplish this midground as you're at the same time focusing on the background. You see what's going on. You've got long-range vision, but you've got immediate next steps. In fact, mountains are what Oxano uses to describe this. They picture far mountain peaks that would be your beyond the horizon vision. And then the hills that are a little bit closer within range, that's the background. Now you're down to almost ground level, looking at the midground a year out, and the road in front of you is the foreground vision. Now, what I want to do is step back around and read my notes here, because this is important information, and I want to make sure I get it right. And so we're going to start at the top of your outline with the Beyond the Horizon vision statement that this group spent a good bit of 2021 developing. It goes like this. We envision St. Luke's as an explosive force of God's radical, just, and inclusive love, reaching hundreds of thousands of people in Indianapolis and beyond who have given up on church or the possibility of a God who cares about them. Now, I want us to keep that statement up there on the screen so you can get the words in the blanks, but point out a few things about it. First, the character and spirit of our congregation, a force of God's radical, just, and inclusive love, not just a mild force, an explosive one. This is a force we must be energized to release and make known. We also speak in terms of reaching hundreds of thousands. Now, clearly, we're not talking about people sitting in the room in the pews. But one thing that we've discovered because of COVID over the last couple of years is just how far our reach is already being extended as a congregation. We are living into the evangelistic scope of John Wesley, who said in the 1700s, "The world is my parish." Each week, right now, we have more than 3,500 people watching a service, joining a class online, or downloading material. And as many as 8,000 a week connecting through some form of social media. And then in this statement, we have clarified our target audience, people who've given up on church or the possibility of a God who loves them. This describes the fastest growing spiritual group in America. those who say they are spiritual but not religious. We want to help people experience a church that is not narrow, exclusive, or condemning, and also one that is spiritually alive and hopeful. So let's move to the next level and the four background strategies. They are, and you can see these in the four boxes on your outline: city impact, equipping disciples, inclusive expansion, and multi-site launch. City impact means we will seek to relieve the suffering and improve the lives of our neighbors living in greatest need and greatest risk. We've identified four key aspects. First, increase the impact of our existing four outreach initiatives: housing, education, food insecurity, and justice. Our goal is to serve 10,000 people and deploy 250 new volunteers. Number two, launch a Freedom School this June for 100 students, in which 85% or more retain or improve reading levels in order to dismantle the preschool to prison pipeline. To do this, we will need 250 volunteers. Number three, raise $100,000 for a Hope Center that helps 1,000 families in poverty. One leading indicator of family crisis, as we learned at a service back in Advent, is diapers, having diapers for families. We want to provide 500,000 diapers for families in need, which will help identify further ways we can offer wraparound services to help households out of poverty. And that brings us to the fourth. To do that, we're going to need to train and deploy 75 Hope Ambassadors who connect with these families and therefore connect them to services available and thus decrease the infant mortality rate. The next background strategy, equipping disciples. This means moving people beyond just attending church activities to experiencing genuine life transformation by living out their faith as fully engaged followers of Jesus Christ. We will build on the work of the last 10 years of engaging people in small groups by offering clear pathways for spiritual growth, faith sharing, serving with our gifts, and deploying and developing leaders. Our aim is to involve 2,500 people in such practices. To do this, we will create a connection team that personally connects with attenders to St. Luke's to help them get better involved in the life of the church and take their next steps in discipleship. We'll also create a team to identify, train, and equip new leaders in the church who represent the diversity of our congregation and the community around us. Our goal is to help people live lives that look like Jesus and to make disciples who make disciples. Number three, inclusive expansion has to do with our worship and hospitality and evaluating how well these welcome the diverse populations around us and what unintended obstacles that there might be. Our goal is to increase our worship attendance by 10% by June of 2024. Not our attendance right now, but what our attendance was before the pandemic. To do this, we will conduct a series of listening sessions to engage all voices in the church in evaluating our services and the ways they can appeal to greater numbers of people of all ages, races, and spiritual needs. We want to understand any ways our services and fellowship experiences prevent others from feeling like they belong, and thus consider ways to help everyone feel safe, included, and inspired, so that we can reach those who have given up on church or the possibility of a God who loves them. And then finally, multi-site launch. This means we will consider ways to extend our reach beyond our current geographic location. And this, we believe, will look like a number of things. First, this spring, we want to launch a digital campus that better connects the hundreds of people who join us online and do not have ability to connect with us in person. COVID, as I mentioned a moment ago, has already extended our reach nationally. We will develop intentional ways to engage our online community in discipleship practices. Our plan is to get at least 1,000 people who are connecting in some way online to take a next step of involvement. We have a team of people defining measurable steps that will tell us if we're making progress and what engagement means for an online church. We also plan to identify microsites of St. Luke's, gatherings of people in community where folks are joining us online and where we might get them connected for in-person fellowship, study opportunities, missional events. An example of what this could look like is when we do a mission event here in Indianapolis. It gets replicated in places where we already have people watching us and they say, St. Luke's is my church. And we're doing those events in Fort Wayne, Evansville, other places. We also feel called to consider new physical campuses of St. Luke's. Most specifically, our governing board has accepted an invitation by the Central District to adopt Broad Ripple United Methodist Church. In recent years, this faithful but declining group of members has struggled to keep their church going. They approved by overwhelming majority for St. Luke's to take possession of their property. Now, this proposal was actually something that started in 2018 when the district approached us with this idea. We put together a team to study the pros and cons. We even met with leaders of the Broad Ripple Church under the leadership of the district superintendent to study together over a six-month period a book called Better Together. After a nearly two-year process, we were ready to make an official proposal, and then COVID-19 happened. We simply put it all on hold while Kevin Davis on our staff has provided pastoral leadership to the Broad Ripple Church while also serving as one of our congregational care pastors. Well, this past year, the DS asked us to pick up the conversation, and after renewed analysis by our discernment team, they recommended to the governing board that we go forward with this proposal, and our board approved. We now have a team working on a strategy to establish Broad Ripple as another location of St. Luke's United Methodist Church. Brad Kalajanin, founding pastor of Cornerstone United Methodist Church, which is now the largest Methodist church in the Michigan Conference and which has three different satellite locations, is consulting with our team on what our strategy will be. Now, why would we consider doing this? First, it's because we were asked. This is an opportunity to maintain a United Methodist presence in an important growth potential part of our city. Our agreement with the conference is not just to adopt Broad Ripple, but commit to injecting new energy into that church with our St. Luke's DNA, a church with a passion for helping others find and give hope through Jesus Christ in a context of openness and inclusion. I'm excited about this possibility. Broad Ripple is a popular, busy, commercially thriving district that attracts people from all over the city. This is a great opportunity to extend the presence and reach of St. Luke's, and with the resources, spirit, and passion of our church, I am confident we can do this. I've been in contact with colleagues of mine who have launched similar multi-sites to ask about their experience. Reverend Lisa Yabua is the pastor of a satellite location of Edenton Street United Methodist in Raleigh, North Carolina, one of the largest Methodist churches in that conference. They sent Lisa to begin Southeast Raleigh Table. They also, about the same time, started another new campus with a different pastor, and both sites are within 2 miles of the main church. Lisa said this came about because of a visioning process the church did in 2009, when they made a simple commitment to do what they felt God wanted, not what they wanted God to do for them. Lisa admitted that at the time when she left to start this community with a number of the members of the church, some felt a sense of loss. But Lisa said if you ask all of these people today, they would say, it's the greatest thing we ever did. They see the people these campus locations are reaching, people who despite living so close to the main church would never have come there, and they celebrate being a part of an undeniable work of God. I love one thing Lisa said to me in particular. She said, this decision helped the church exercise its spiritual muscles. They had gotten used to doing comfortable things that met the needs of the people in the church, and it reawakened in them a desire to do daring things for people beyond their church. In Oklahoma City, my friend Bob Long serves another St. Luke's, where he's been the pastor for over a quarter century. Several years ago, they responded to opportunities to establish new locations. A new one in Edmonds now worships 500 to 700 people. Another existing church they took over in an underserved part of town did not make it as a congregation, but to their surprise, it became a new location for their missions hub, and they've been shocked by how God has used that. An example of this is before the takeover, they were doing 5,000 mobile meals a year to people in need. Now, through that church location, they're doing 250,000 mobile meals each year. In both of these churches, the overall attendance has grown by 50% since they started the satellites. Such an action for St. Luke's isn't new. We did this in 1995 when we started the garden. And also, as I pointed out last Sunday, it's the way that we started here at St. Luke's, when a group of people from Central Methodist downtown left with the blessing of that church to start a congregation on the north side. And why would we do it? It's how God works. God's satellites. God goes to where people are so that they can know and experience his love for them. God reaches out doing whatever's necessary to connect with people. So the idea of multi-siting is very much in line with our own practices and beliefs at St. Luke's. Now, I want to pause for a moment, because I know this is probably a little bit like drinking water from a fire hose. We're going to pause and just get an immediate response from you with a couple of questions. If you're here in the room, you're going to see a QR code on the screen. If you'll just point your smartphone at the QR code, have we got it up there? There we go. It will take you to our first question. And if you're watching online right now, hopefully you're seeing that appear on your screen, or you can click on a link that is in the chat. And the first question is this: which of the four background visions do you think will be most significant in helping us reach greater numbers of people who have given up on church or the possibility of a God who loves them? Which of those four? Now, we believe all four are going to be critical. But if you had to pick one that you said, I think that one might be most critical, most significant to furthering your vision, I want you to click on it. And in a moment, we're going to see how our responses are being tallied. So if you'll locate that on your phone, answer that first question. People online are doing this. I think we can, in a moment, see the common tally as it comes in. Behind me. Okay. Oh, there we go. Thank you. So city impact, inclusive expansion, multi-siting, equipping disciples. And it looks like it's staying in about that same percentage range. So this is kind of a fun way to see our responses. And then let's go to a second question. Which one of these do you have the most questions about? Which one of these, despite my brilliant way of giving you significant detail, still leaves you with a number of questions? You say, I really want to learn more about that. I want to understand it better. I want to know some of the concepts behind it. So hopefully you're seeing the second question appear. Do people have to go back and click on the QR again? Yes, okay. So click on the QR again. If you're watching online, just take your phone to the QR code again, and you'll come up to the second question. Which one of these do you have the most questions about? So multi-siting, the city impact, inclusive expansion, and then equipping disciples. Very interesting. Well, I will be sharing with you in just a moment how you can get some of those questions answered and be engaged in the conversation about this, because we want your involvement in this process now. As I pointed out earlier in my mountain climbing story, you can't move forward and look up at the same time. You have to turn attention to the next steps immediately in front of you. And that's what the bottom 1-4 is about. The mid-ground vision, and then below that, the 90-day goals or the foreground initiatives. These are the immediate next steps. Our one-year mid-ground vision should not surprise you because you've been hearing it in our language already. You belong. Between now and this July, we want to re-engage over 6,000 members and current attenders and reach out to 1,000 new people with the radical love of Jesus. As people slowly return to church engagement, we want everyone to know they belong at St. Luke's and that God has a purpose for them. We started this work 6 months ago, so we are halfway through this first mid-ground vision. Some of the foreground initiatives we've already worked on, including the maximization of our Christmas concerts as re-engagement events. That was hugely successful. Adding up the in-person attendance at our three concerts and all of the people who watched online, we had over 8,000 attendance at Christmas concerts, the most we've ever had by far. We also have been working on a database cleanup to get accurate information on every member and keep current with all St. Lukers on their needs and concerns. So in the blanks below the You Belong statement, these are the four areas for this quarter. A 531 initiative in Lent. You're going to be hearing more about this in the weeks ahead. We want every St. Luke's active attender, which is about 2,000 adults, to pray for five people who do not have a spiritual family. Invite three to St. Luke's events and bring at least one new person to an Easter service here in person or online. If we do this, then over the 40 days, we will have prayed for over 10,000 people, offer 6,000 invitations to events, and have a goal of bringing 2,000 new guests to an Easter service. The second initiative is town halls. We will be offering town hall events to get feedback from members on this long-range vision and allow you to speak into it. We want this to be a time to re-engage St. Lukers in the life of the church, to follow when these events will happen, or to sign up and learn about other associated activities with our long-range vision. You'll see a website on the back of your outline, youbelongindy.com. If you go to that website, it takes you to a page on our church website that shares about our long-range vision, and you can click on the town halls to see when they're going to be offered. They're coming up in the next few weeks, and to go ahead and register to attend one. A third initiative is Lent invite events, the ways we can invite people to participate. We're going to have a big gospel concert in March, along with our Easter egg hunt, which is a great way to reach young families, along with other special services, Holy Week activities, as well as the town halls and the outreach events that will be occurring. And lastly, we're doing a building feasibility study. We are assessing the needs of our facility here at 100 West 86th, and what will be needed to provide vibrant ministry for the next generation. Now again, I know this is a lot of information, but I want to add a couple of things as we get ready to close. First, what I have shared here is not inclusive of all ministries and efforts in St. Luke's. These are just events related to our future vision. But we hope this brings focus and purpose to the many other things we are going to keep doing. We will still give emphasis to being an inclusive church. We will work on anti-racism and pour into our minority business incubator. And we will keep working to make our United Methodist Church fully inclusive of LGBTQ+ members. We will still have an emphasis on reaching younger families, children, and youth. That does not go away. We set that as a priority 9 years ago. We're going to continue to seek to reach the next generation. And we will continue to support our many outreach partners and international ministries in Kenya, Haiti, and Sierra Leone. Did I say it was going to be easy? No. Sometimes it causes queasiness and double vision, and you get a little wobbly because you've got these big long-range goals and you've got immediate next steps that you have to keep doing. But I believe the churches that are going to thrive coming out of this pandemic are the ones who roll their sleeves up and tackle daring things, not just for right now, but for down the road. God doesn't call us to easy land, but faithful land. And it does cause a sense of disequilibrium, but it is something we can do. That's why the message is called double vision. It's disconcerting at 14,000 feet to get dizzy. I know. But I can tell you there's nothing like standing at 14,500 feet and looking at the Matterhorn eye to eye. When you get to the mountaintop, the dizziness goes away. So let me share two emails with you. One is from Linda Arendt, a St. Luke's member who heard this vision described at our Winter Summit weeks ago. Linda is a founding member of St. Luke's. She was baptized in Central Methodist, and her parents were part of that original group that started St. Luke's. She has been here her whole life. She said, "When I think about where our church is and where we hope it will go, I think if my parents could see what St. Luke's has become, they would be so very proud. We must continue to take risks while also remembering where we came from. I'm so grateful for this church." And finally this, a person who first connected with St. Luke's online this year and shared with me a recent email expressing appreciation for our openness and aliveness. "Hi, Pastor Rob. My story explains what St. Luke's has done for me. I grew up the youngest of five children in Williamsport, Indiana. Our family was poor, but we had a loving family, and I would describe my upbringing as wonderful. Every Sunday, my parents dressed us up for church and Sunday school. The church we attended was in Attica, Indiana, where my mother's sister and her husband attended. On Saturdays, my father managed a pool hall in Williamsport. And one Saturday, he talked the guys at the pool hall into attending church with us the following Sunday. It was then we discovered our church was not a welcoming church. My aunt and uncle were furious that we would bring those type of people to their church. So therefore, our church going came to a sudden stop. Although I believe in our Lord and read the Bible, I didn't think I needed church. The pandemic changed all that. I began watching your services online in early 2020. And began just recently coming to St. Luke's in person along with my husband. You taught me that St. Luke's is an all-inclusive, all-welcoming church that changed my whole way of thinking. I want to thank you for giving me the community of the church back again. We look forward to becoming members in the new year." I just wonder how many other people like that are out there. They've given up on church or the possibility of a God who loves them. In a church bold and daring enough to say, "We'll do what it takes to reach them where they are, to invite them in and help them feel a part, and to let them know that that welcome extends to everybody," is a church I believe God will use mightily for the future. And I believe God wants to continue to use St. Luke's as mightily for the unwritten story that's ahead of us, as God has done in the story that we know behind us. This is our dream.